Welcome to JGL Law for You. This podcast is sponsored by Joseph Greenwald and Lake, a suburban Maryland law firm that has been representing clients throughout the DC metropolitan area and across the country for close to 50 years. JGL Law for You is a podcast by lawyers, but not for lawyers only. On JGL Law for You, we will bring you up close and personal with our lawyers and some special guests who will be discussing how to navigate the many legal processes, developments in the law, other current events, and how they may affect you, your family, or your business. Today, we're talking with Darren Roemer, a partner in JGL's family law group, about that initial meeting with your lawyer. What do you ask? What do you bring? What should you expect? And with over 18 years of practice, Darren brings strategic legal counsel and has learned to diffuse tense situations for his clients as they navigate one of the most difficult and stressful times in their lives. He seeks cost-effective resolutions through negotiation and mediation, but can be tough and is well-respected in the courtroom. Darren takes pride in the fact that a high percentage of his clients are referrals from former clients who routinely refer their friends, family, and colleagues. Welcome aboard, Darren. Glad to have you today.
All right. It's good to see you, David.
Let's start here. I'm getting ready to go see my lawyer for the first time. And let's talk family law specifically. Getting ready to go see my lawyer for the first time. What should I wear? What should I expect? When should I get there? Let's start with the easy stuff.
Well, obviously, you want to get there on time. I think business casual is fine. And most clients, you know, dress with business casual and come prepared to have maybe a longer conversation than, say, coming to a doctor's appointment that's going to be in and out. You might be there for up to a couple hours. So be prepared to sit and have a long conversation.
And should I bring any paperwork or documents with me when I come to see you?
Absolutely. The more documents you can collect and bring with you, the better. And any documents the client can bring is helpful, such as pay statements, tax returns, mortgage statements, particularly current mortgage statements, current bank statements, retirement investment accounts, and loan documents. Those are always helpful. I was speaking with a client recently, and you know, she was explaining that her husband, who owns his own business, is not accurate in reporting his income. And his income, since they've filed for divorce, has allegedly gone down even by half. But you don't lower your income when you apply for loans. So his tax documents show lower income, but his loan applications show the higher income. And so I asked her to get the loan applications, and any document like that is helpful. And then for if you have children that are under the age of 18, for calculating child support, any expenses for the health insurance, medical care, any extraordinary medical care expenses or dental, orthodontia, private school expense, anything like that is helpful so we can calculate child support while you're there meeting with the attorney versus having to have supplemental or subsequent meetings later on.
But what if I don't know a lot of this? I mean, you know, my spouse or my co-parent, you know, he or she takes care of these bills, and I don't really know what a lot of this stuff costs. So what, you know, what do you tell me to do?
Well, that's often the case. And so as we're sitting there going through these things, we'll make a list of what we need to either request from the spouse's attorney, or make a game plan of how we're going to go about obtaining those. If you're a joint legal custodian, as is the case in Maryland, you can obtain those directly from the source, and either the client or we can get that for them. And there's other ways to get it as well.
Okay, and should I be prepared to add, I mean, I'm sure I'm gonna have a lot of questions about the process, about what to expect. You know, should I have questions ready, and if so, or what's the best way to present them in that initial meeting with my lawyer?
So clients are going to have a lot of questions, and so I always advise my clients to write them out before the meeting starts. Because as with you, as an experienced attorney, you're going to have your own way of conducting the interview and going through it. And of course, it's an organic conversation, but you still go through the interview, parsing out the information in a certain pattern. And so you don't, as the client, they don't want to have any of their questions skipped or missed. And so I like to, at the end of the interview, ask, is there anything I may have missed, or do you have any other questions? And so, you know, hopefully most of their questions would have been covered during the course of our meeting. And usually they are. But if they have any questions that didn't get answered, they have them there written out. And it's also, it's not a distraction to them constantly having to think, what is it that I was wanting to ask? That sort of thing. So I ask them, you know, usually, or advise them, have your questions written out in advance of meeting with us.
And what kind of questions should I expect you to ask me? You know, I understand that the finances are obviously important. You want to get a sense of that and what we have and what we owe and what we spend. But what else other than money, what kind of questions should I as a new client expect that you're going to ask me?
Well, you have to understand, I don't know you. I haven't lived your life. I've never met you before. This is the first time meeting you. But I need to know all about you. I need to know you as well as your best friend. Writing out key information from the marriage, key dates. I even had a client explain to me how she met her husband and the proposal, the date of the marriage, dates of birth of the kids, date of separation, how they came about being separated, or if they're not separated, what's kind of led up to the dissolution of the marriage, the any grounds or factors for me to consider and advise what's been going on. And each client has a story about what's been going on in the marriage. And, you know, you don't ever set out to get divorced, but having that story written out for me, or prepared to tell the story of how they've gotten to this place of needing to contact an attorney, is always helpful. And if there's any key dates are particularly important, but key elements and witnesses and family friends and things like that, that's always helpful to have.
And if I write things out and that I give to you as part of that meeting, or have you read or look at while we're talking, is that confidential, or can somebody else look at that?
It is. The entire meeting with your attorney, even if you don't retain the attorney ultimately, is confidential and privileged under Maryland law, and it's intended to be. So I can never disclose what you've conveyed to me in the meeting, except in the event that you are going to intend bodily harm to somebody, murder, or do something that's felonious. In which case, I'll probably end the meeting. And
imagine a few of your clients have felt that way before they come in the door, I imagine, now and again.
Yeah.
All kidding aside, of course.
But yeah, it's confidential and privileged.
What if I want to bring a friend or a family member with me to the meeting? Is that something that is okay?
No, that's actually an interesting question, and it's been ruled on by Maryland's appellate courts. Actually in a case that involved our firm, interestingly. And a meeting with an attorney is confidential and privileged under Maryland statute. Bringing a friend or a family member can sometimes waive that privilege, but at the same time, it's sometimes helpful to have a friend or a close family member there for emotional support. And they can also have a good recall of significant events in the marriage that the client may omit. In the particular case I was referencing, one of the attorneys from our firm had a client who was really emotionally distraught, and she brought with her a close friend. And I believe it was the Court of Appeals ruled that it was not a waiver of the privilege because she was integral to the attorney-client meeting, and it wasn't really there for the purposes of waiving, but for assisting the attorney in advising the client. So in that instance, but that's really on a case by case basis. So you kind of walk a fine line. But again, the attorney can't go out and disclose, hey, I just met with Susie Q and her friend Betty. It's for Betty to disclose that she was in a meeting with Susie Q. So that's also something I advise the client. You know, if you're going to meet with me, it's completely confidential and privileged. If you're going to bring your friend in, by all means, you and your friend shouldn't go out telling everybody, oh, by the way, I just met with an attorney and I took my friend in.
Well, what if my friend goes and can she go talk to people about what you and I talked about in the meeting?
She certainly can, but she certainly shouldn't. So if you're going to bring somebody in that you trust, then I'd advise them they absolutely should not. They should keep your confidence private.
So then I guess the message is don't bring anybody in who you don't really trust. 110%. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Because in that case, if I brought a friend who may also be friendly with my spouse, there's nothing to stop that friend, right, from talking to my spouse or talking to even my spouse as a lawyer about what went on in that meeting, right?
Correct.
Okay. Okay. And in terms of timeline for things, I mean, how interested are you? You know, I've been married for, say, 20 plus years, give or take. How interested are you in events that happened back in the early 2000s in my relationship with my spouse?
There's a doctrine of law called latches, which is sitting on your rights, so to speak, for in layman's terms. And with people who come in and say, well, my husband cheated on me, you know, in 2002, but you have, continued to have marital relations. That's condonation under Maryland law. So sometimes they're completely irrelevant and immaterial. And then sometimes, as one judge said in a case that I had, it leads to the mosaic, as she called it, of the entire marriage. It's like a jigsaw puzzle, and it let her know or fill in the gaps of what was going on throughout the entire marriage. So again, it's kind of a case by case basis, but sometimes it's stale evidence if it's so far gone. I had a client in a case that just wrapped up, I think, this last year, but she wanted to complain about things that had gone on throughout the marriage, going back to like the first year of the marriage in a 40-year marriage. We went to mediation, and the retired judge at the mediation said, you know, ma'am, I just don't know that if you go to trial, I don't know that one of my brethren judges is going to consider this when you've lived with it for 40 years. Now, you know, she was still really angry about it, but, we never got to trial. We resolved the case, but.
Okay. So would you tell a client to be a filter or to say, just put all the information down and let me figure out what might make the most sense in your case? In other words, you know, building that mosaic that you mentioned.
Well, you're hiring us, and we're the ones that have the experience in the courtroom and with mediation and with the judges. So I would say put all that information down and let us filter it and figure out whether it's going to be relevant or helpful. And in some instances, you know, clients don't really even have an idea what may be going on. I mean, some people have repeat behavior. So, you know, husband cheated on me, you know, three times back in the 90s and the early 2000s, but I don't think he's cheating now, but that might, you know, set off alarm bells with me to, you know, look at particular things or seek discovery out in this case. And it might lead to the discovery of additional information. So, I mean, by all means, I would tell your attorney everything, whether you necessarily think it's relevant or not.
In cases in particular, just turn for just a second, cases that involve abuse, you know, family or spousal abuse, whether it's emotional or physical abuse, those things tend to happen over a long period of time, or often can, right? So I guess in that situation, you would be interested, right, in more so maybe in what happened 5 years, 10 years, 15 years ago, in the event that you're looking to try to develop some sort of a pattern, maybe, or
absolutely. And in the case of an abused spouse, they tend to have the long-term pattern of abuse and accepting it. And even a lot of times has been the case where you don't find out about it until you're deep into the case and have built a rapport and a relationship with that client, and they'll disclose something like that to you. I find that they don't always disclose it at the initial meeting, or bringing a friend is one means of finding out some of these things that they're a little ashamed or embarrassed to disclose. So, and those things do go back years, obviously.
All right. So is there anything else that you would suggest, anything critical, I guess, that a potential client or someone coming to see you for that first time ought to know coming into that meeting?
The more information that we can go through, the better. They're going to have a lot of questions that they want answered. They're going to have a lot of unknowns. And the more they can share and tell me, the more information I can convey and help strategize and have a game plan. One thing I left out, I also like to see pictures. It helps me to form things in my mind. Pictures of everything, the home, vacations, the children, everything. So I find it to be helpful. I definitely use photographs in trial when I go to court. It gives you kind of an overall sense of the family, their lifestyle.
So pictures of children, of the place where we live, and maybe a picture of my spouse or that sort of thing you think is important?
Spouse, the activities the kids participated in, any vacations, how active a parent they were, those sorts of things.
How do I know, before I come in to see you, how do I know that you haven't already talked to my spouse or that somebody else in your firm hasn't talked to my spouse?
So that's an excellent question, which you would already know the answer to if you've met with anybody at Joseph Greenwald & Lake, because we do an extensive conflicts check. Before you speak to one of the attorneys for Joseph Greenwald & Lake, our assistants and support staff confirm that neither the spouse nor any agents for the spouse or mother, father, et cetera, aunt, uncle, have contacted Joseph Greenwald & Lake for a consult or given us any information. So once the conflict check is completed, then you're able to speak to us for the first time.
Okay. I mean, I remember the old show, The Sopranos, right, where when Tony and his wife were separating, he was calling all the lawyers in town to make sure that they couldn't represent his wife. I mean, do people do that? Do people call family lawyers and try to get on the phone to try to make sure that they can't represent the spouse?
That absolutely happens.
Okay. All right. So I guess the answer is I ought to get on. If I'm looking for somebody, I ought to not wait too long to do it. I ought to get on, figure out who I want to talk to, narrow the list down, and schedule appointments without sitting still for too long. Is that accurate?
You should. And you should also settle for an attorney, not settle for an attorney, but you should ultimately retain an attorney that you're comfortable with, not just an attorney that you're okay with. This needs to be, it's going to be a long-term personal relationship. Somebody that you need to disclose very, personal things with, and somebody you're also comfortable in their professional prowess. So they need to check all the right boxes. They need to have the professional background credibility, but also you need to have a rapport with this person when you meet with them.
Yeah, I always tell people, it's very different than hiring a plumber or an electrician, right? An electrician comes in, they do the job, you pay them, and they leave, and then you don't talk to them again until some other electrical problem shows up. But a family lawyer obviously is a very different relationship.
Yeah, it's a little bit like a counselor and an accountant and legal advice at the same time.
All right. Well, Darren, thanks very much. We really appreciate you joining us today on JGL Law for You. Now, if someone wants to reach out to you, talk with you about their case, what's the best way for that individual to get a hold of you?
They can reach us through our website at www.jgllaw.com. They can reach me at my email, which is drumer@jgllaw.com, or they can look at us on Facebook, which we have an excellent Facebook page.
And what's your number, Darren, if I want to call you and schedule an appointment?
240-399-7895.
Excellent. Thanks to everybody out there for listening in. We hope that you join us next time. I'm David Bullitt, and this is JGL Law for You.